Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to a very rhythmic edition of the Supertone Show.
You're somebody being someone else, and I will never know you. A parody of borrowed skin, a sequined hat, a battered tin, enamel flaking off your lips from rusty words, broken hinge. You bend the knee to polarizing confusion. A saliferous ear of sparkling delight, what more do you need? What more do you want? The legacy of memory eroded by dementia. Replaced In the flicker of an eye, time will forget you ever existed and move along. With no teary heart or regretful dreams, because time does not remember. It just moves forward like an iceberg through space. One day the stars will all burn out and the night will be forever dark. But for now, we live. Starlight and Campbell. A Part of Me is Broken, Part 2. And that's from the third studio album, Starlight One, released a couple of weeks ago on the Supertone record label. And we're doing a very special theme show this week. All thanks to our drummer, Hugo Danin. We went to the Porto Drum Show last weekend. Up north, it's up in the north of Portugal. And Hugo is the director of the event. He runs the event. And it was an absolutely fantastic weekend. So much to learn from. So many drummers, so many. It was such a vibrant event that we decided that we'd celebrate drummers this week. And the drummers that actually we met and appeared at the show. Most of them anyway. So we thought we'd start the show off with our very own Hugo, or as you say in Portuguese, Hugo Danin, who played on that track.
There's no H in Portuguese. No. So therefore it's Hugo, which Hugo sounds very odd. I think you actually silently pronounce the H. Anyway, this is not a Portuguese lesson. What it is, it's about the music.
Celebration.
And that is the last track from Starlight One, the album. And when we wrote it originally, we didn't think about drummers. All we did the songs, and we were, you know, we were working on the sounds, we got synthesizers and stuff that we'd never really done before. And then when we came to record it, we thought, well, we're going to get a different style of drummer. Steve Gibson, who played on all our previous stuff, fantastic rock and roll drummer, he's really great. But we just wanted something different on this. So we contacted a friend of ours who recommended Hugo, or Hugo. And they said, oh, he'll never play with, he's too busy.
Cause, well, we did say, who's the best drummer in Portugal?
We did. And and this guy's there. Anyway, it happened, you know, he wanted to play with us. We wanted to play with us. He came down and recorded it. But he changed the sound of what we were doing and what we really envisaged. What I love about that song, from a drums point of view, is that there's two distinct sections to it. The first one is sort of pretty rock and roll. And if you listen back to it, and I would urge you to stop this podcast and actually go back and listen to the track again and listen to those hi-hats. It's got doom, boom, boom, doom, doom, psst, psst. I love that groove he's got. And what I did with the production, I really highly compressed the snare and stuff, which I don't normally do, but I wanted it to sound pretty 80s. I wanted it to have that sort of 80s Simon Phillips thing going on. And then at the end, when Susie does a monologue at the end, which is really cool, he then goes into this sort of groovy, sort of odd rhythm. And you only really pick up on what he's doing when you stop talking at the end. And yeah, you can just hear it. It's like, yeah, two bars at the end. And it's a very complex rhythm, but it's got a tremendous groove. And that is what I think he brought to the party. He changed it from, you know, what we were doing as a standard rock and roll band into something just a bit different, more contemporary on the drums, which I love.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, you know, because it's like we'd never met before and he rocked up here and we just chatted, had dinner, didn't we? And then the next day we were like jamming away and playing through the songs, we got the demos and stuff. and just played all different types of music for a few hours just to get a feel for each other as a trio. And then we started working through the songs, and it was great because it was very much a together thing. It wasn't, I know that we'd written it and we'd written the lyrics and the melodies and we had all the sort of synth stuff, but it all kind of gelled together because we left enough space for Hugo to come in and actually be, give of himself and have his personality with us, which is something that I really loved. And I've also, as a bass player, it was, it's because he's like the other half of me. And it's been a really interesting and challenging in a way sometimes, just because of being different grooves, and he's a different style of player, and he's a fantastic player, and we get on so well, and it's great. There's a great tension there, and it's just, it's been like reading a great novel. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Musically, it just has been the whole last few weeks have been great, and then to be up in the drum show and to see him, because he cares so much, he's obsessed with drumming, a bit like you with guitars, you
he
know
is.
You're equally obsessed, and I just thought, this is, I'm so happy that we're doing this drum thing, because there's still so much to learn, you know, from a bassist point of view about other bass players, from a musical point of view as well about drummers, and it's like a whole new world. It's like, you know, there's a world above the ocean and under the sea. I felt like that at the Porto Drum Show. It was like the veil had been lifted, and there were all these really geeky, intense kind of, to, all down to the wood of the drumsticks and the actual shells and the skins and the techniques and the standard grip and everything. I mean, it's a lifetime of learning and exploration. It's just amazing.
But I'll tell you one thing.
What?
You put any of those drummers on any drum kit you can find, and they'll sound just like them. Michael Loren All-Stars, and that's Bonfim Blues from the album The Michael Loren All-Stars, the remastered reissue collection, released in 2023. And the song originally featured on the album Once Upon a Time in Portugal. Wow. Released 2016 on the Why Not Music record label. It also features a culturally apt cork-covered album cover. And of course, did you know that virtually all the world supplies of corks for bottles come from Portugal?
Indeed.
And the song was inspired by Bonfim, a neighbourhood in East Porto.
There you go. Bonfim. It's like we say Bonfim Semana, so have a good weekend.
Ah, well, there you see, my language skills are nothing short of shite. Anyway, let's not worry about that. Michael Loren, I can talk about.
Michael.
Yeah, interesting, because when we first moved to Portugal, we were looking out for musicians and connect up and stuff. And we connected up with Michael because he's quite a famous and he's all over the place. You see him everywhere, you know, on the internet, that is. So, you know, we messaged him and we're going to meet up and stuff. He's going to come down here, but it never kind of happened. It was sort of, when we got here, there was still COVID and there was a lot of stuff going on. So anyway, when we were at the Porto Drum Show last week, we saw him. And I saw him from the back, and you can't really miss him because he's got a shaved, bald head, and he's got a very distinctive head shape. One of those guys that I looked at, I thought, that's Michael Loren. So I went over and introduced myself and with Susie, and we had a chat, and it was great, a real great guy. What I didn't realise is that he was a teacher of Hugo.
And he taught, I know, but so, we didn't know.
So what we didn't know is that Hugo had actually learnt quite a bit of stuff from Michael. And as it transpired, about four of the world-class drummers that were there were also taught by this guy.
Michael.
Because he's not just a musician, and he plays blues, he plays a lot of different styles. On here it's jazz, of course, but he's also an educator. You know, and very esteemed.
What was really beautiful, though, so we rock up into Porto, and we're in the van of rock, and the girls are with us because there's no way we're leaving them behind, because we always go out as a family unit. And we went to this beautiful place in Porto by the river. And as you say, you saw Michael. We walked around, we saw him, and he was just ever so loving. And then next thing you know, you've got Paolo, his friends, and another chap, and we all sat down, had something to eat. I mean, it was just such a warm welcome. And what you say is like, yeah, this guy, Michael, he just like, it felt like we knew him and we'd only just met him. But he's been such an influence and so inspirational to so many people. It was, you don't quite realise, do you, if you're not a part of that world, really? So, because I know that Hugo went over to New York to study as well. I mean, Michael now, he lives in Lisbon, or just outside of the city centre and stuff. But I was doing some research, obviously I would do research for the show, and it's quite exciting, actually, because we're actually going to meet up with him next week and go into Lisbon and hang out for a bit. And
we are.
And it says here, right, when you look into his past, so he started drumming at the age of 8, and his dad used to take him to drum battle concerts. I mean, these things, I didn't even know they existed. So that featured people like Buddy Rich and Gene Krupa. And he said, and then one day you hear Elvin Jones and Tony Williams, and your ears start to turn, and you realise that there are different ways of drumming, really, different styles. And what I love about Michael is that he fuses all different styles as well. So it's jazz, it's blues, it's funk, it's rock, and it's world music. And he does describe himself as a musician, a drummer, and an educator, because he likes to inspire people. He's a very generous soul. And he's got a great smile.
He has, yeah.
So when you get him on a subject that he really loves, he just beams like a sunflower, doesn't he? He's just such a lovely chap. And as you say, you know, these people, as we'll talk about as we play them later on in the show, to think that he was there teaching them, I wonder what he was like, you know. Nope, do it again. No, how about that? Do that.
I bet he was.
Yeah.
Now, what I love about that track as well is that the recording, I mean, it's pretty heavily compressed, but you can hear somebody breathing.
I noticed that too.
That first, when it goes into that
I
solo.
I think it's the bass player.
Well, it could quite well be, because, you know, it all depends where the mics were, but it's great because it gives it that real, you know, live thing. Because the thing about jazz is that you want to be as close to them as possible. You want to be in that room. You want to get the total ambience. It's not like a produced thing. Yeah, and, you know, and that sounds, it's got, like, Miles Davis written all over it, and it kind of blew that sort of thing, you know?
Well, do you know, he's played with everyone. He's played with Tom Jones, Papa Chubby, Chuck Berry, Paul Anka. It was great. I was watching an interview with him, actually, because I wanted to get a bit more of a sense of him. You know what it's like when he's professionally interviewed and stuff. And he was saying, this interview chap just said to him, so what was it like working with Chuck Berry? And he just looked at him and he said, you know, it was like at the end of the set that they played, he walked over to him and said, I told you not to play the fucking endings. And he burst out laughing, you know, because it's like, I think he was, you know, he said, but he loved his rhythm guitar with Chuck Berry because he used to share a lot of the solos with the other band members.
Yeah.
And he said he was a great rhythm guitarist.
Well, the quintessential, I mean, you know, he developed that style, and you listen to any of those tracks and it sounds fantastic. His rhythm guitar is just tremendous, and his lead guitar, and his vocals, and his songs.
Virgil Donati. Rhythm Zero, and that's from his fourth studio album, In This Life, which is self-released in 2013. And Virgil is widely regarded as one of the most technically advanced drummers of all time. And I'm overwhelmed. What do you do with that? It's incredible.
It is. And, you know, we're not huge jazz rock fans in this house. We don't, you know, the old stuff, your Bad Vishnu Orchestras, your Billy Cobbs, all that. Yes, this is, I got a heavier, much heavier guitar overtone and the bass and everything. But we saw this guy, and we were actually in the audience when he was playing, and he did like a masterclass, because during the Porto Drum Show, they had, you know, a series of drums, like four or five a day. And this was the guy that was before the headliner.
Yeah.
So he was, this was like,
captivating.
I have never seen anything like it. And, you know, his rhythm, his style, his technique was just unbelievable. And when you listen to that, all the rolls, the change of time signatures, all that, it is just crazy. And from a technical point of view, it is genius. Now, Michael Lorenz said, this is our friend now, Michael, he said that this guy actually took double bass drum playing, you know, much further ahead than it had ever been. And as I say, it's one of the most technically brilliant guys of all time. And the bassist, Brian Beller, wrote, "Imagine the technical accuracy of Mike Mangini, the off-the-rails phrasing of Vinnie Colaiuta, our favourite drummer of all time, the beat displacement of Dave Weckl, and the rock sensibility of Tommy Aldridge," and that's pretty much Virgil Donati. You know, I mean,
all of it, all at once, all the time.
Yeah, incredible.
And I felt, I've got to say, I was mesmerised as well, because, you know, on him, when he hits that kick, he commits, he's there. There was so much energy, and you actually got to really like him as well, because he was in it. It was every single fibre of his body was totally and utterly committed to that performance. I'm not a great fan of, you know, like playing to backing tracks, and I miss like songs, you know, because that was like an orchestral work, and just listening to that then you go, oh, a bit Jeff Beck-esque, you know, little bits. And then I heard Dave Bainbridge as well, you know, from Iona, who's now Life Signs, and you can hear this kind of progressive aspect, but that's from the musical arrangements. And it's like, I'm sure when he plays with different artists, which he's done, I mean, he's played with Dave Stewart, Steve Vai, Billy Sheehan. He's played with them all, really. And I know then I'd connect more with his style of play. But this is him self-released, his album.
Yeah.
But when he collaborates with other artists, I think it's more accessible. But we really wanted to play him because Virgil, I don't think I've ever met a Virgil.
No.
Except for on maybe Thunderbirds, it was Virgil. But he and also he took the mic in him and he's just chatting away, wasn't he? And
you don't expect him to be Australian.
No.
That's the first thing. As soon as he has a good eye, it's one of those sort of situations. Well,
he was born in Melbourne and he started playing drums at the age of two.
Mm.
Well, of course, kids, they stop bashing around. So, you know, you can say he got a saucepan at two and a spoon or whatever. No, but anyway, he started playing with his dad as a musician. I think he was about age six or something. And he was signed to a major label in his mid-teens. I mean, he's had an amazing career so far. But also, he said the first rock drummer to make a big impact on him was Ian Paice of Deep Purple.
Now we know something about Ian Paice.
No, I was going to say, let's bring it back to somewhere where we know, which planet that we know.
Yeah. you know, back in the day, there were those drummers. And the big drummers then, you know, Ian Paice and, of course, John Bonham. John Bonham, a genius, you know, in every respect on a rock side. But Ian Paice, he's one of the most underrated drummers. And I'm so glad that I read this, that someone as technically proficient and brilliant as Virgil actually mentions him. Because the thing is with Ian Paice, he had swing. He swung Deep Purple. And when you ever listen to a Deep Purple track, you know, it's got a certain thing that other bands don't have. It's like a Ringo thing. You know, Ringo, he could be the only drummer in the Beatles because he's just got that thing, you know. And Deep Purple and Ian Paice, exactly the same. I mean, you listen to Fireball, those that I don't think it's a double kick drum on that. I think it's one kick drum. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think he used double kicks, Ian Paice, and there wasn't double bass drum pedals in those days. Anyway, and you know, I'm in my element today because I just love drums. And
I know you do.
If I wasn't a guitar player, I'd be a drummer, but I'm shit because I can't play more than, you know, anything more than two things, you know, I mean, left hand and right hand, I'm all right with, but when I've got four, it's just a nightmare, you know, so I would be terrible. But I love recording them, I love listening to them, and I love the genius of Virgil Donati. You're listening to the Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell, and that was Billy Cobham, Stratus, from the album Spectrum, which released on October the 1st, 1973, on the Atlantic Record label. Now, we played a Billy Cobham track last week.
And then we met him.
And then, yes,
yeah.
We met him. And I was chatting with him, and I couldn't believe it. I had to pinch myself, because, of course, I'm a fanboy. Who couldn't be? He, when he approached the stage, he had a walking stick, and he shuffled up to the drums. And I thought, oh no, this is going to be really. I always remember seeing one of the saddest moments of my life was seeing Peter Green. It was in the Isle of Man, and it was with the Splinter Project. And he was just a shadow of his former self, and he just wasn't Peter Green, you know. And I cried when I was watching him. And I thought, I'm going to have the same thing here. But when he got behind those drums, he turned into a Superman.
He did.
His kit is fucking huge. I think he's got about 8 toms, 2 bass drums. He's got cymbals coming out of his arse.
It was like one of each in the sweet shop.
You know, he's doing all... Unbelievable. And the band were fantastic. The guitar player was sensational. I actually wasn't too keen on the bass player, to tell you the truth, but the keyboard player was amazing. So, husband, Gary Husband, I should say. I was going to say Tony Husband then, the late great. But Gary Husband. And I can't remember the name of the guitar player, but what I'm going to do, I'm going to put it in the show notes. So if you look at the show notes, because we do it on Substack, vibes.starlight-campbell.com. Sorry about that. And anyway, he was absolutely fantastic.
He was, wasn't he? It's like there were moments, because, I mean, I've got to be honest, though, because it's a jazz fusion classic, this album. I get it. But then I don't get it. So I'm learning still. There are bits when there was a groove earlier, do-do-do-do-do, and I thought, that sounds like Tal Wilkenfeld. Because on this album, it was Lee Sklar. She's been listening to Lee. And I'm thinking, I need to learn that. Because what I love is like, it's da-da-da-da. And when I saw the bass player playing this, it's like, you could see the fingers going. But in a way, you know, a lot of the time as well, when you're learning a new instrument, and it's still new to me in some respects, you know, it's like, what to learn? What is it that you're going to do? You know, what do you want to learn? What sort of a player do you want to be? But it was really interesting, because I'm starting to get to know the characters now of who's influenced who and who sounds a bit like who, you know, and how somebody can mimic a sound from like sound like somebody else, but it's someone else playing, if you know what I mean. Does that make sense?
Well, that's right. Yeah. I mean, she's obviously done her homework, because the stuff she did with Jeff Beck, it just is like this. It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, because Lee Sklar, what an amazing bass player. But the thing is, I just want to talk about this track. And what really excites me is the beginning bit, because the beginning bit is Tommy Bolin with his Echoplex. And of course, I use an Echoplex, and it's a bass, a tape echo unit. Really old school. I still use one from 1974, and he was using one on this, and it sounds fantastic. But of course, Tommy Bolin was actually the guitar player for a year in Deep Purple. So there you are. That's the connection.
Oh, get you, sunshine.
Yeah. And the last performance he did before he died of a heroin overdose, silly lad.
Sad.
Yeah, very, very sad indeed. He was supporting Jeff Beck. And there's a picture of him. The last picture of him ever taken was with him, Jeff Beck, backstage. So it all connects up. Is these things. Now, we're talking about the Porter Drum Show. We're talking about Hugo. We're talking about Michael Lauren. We're talking about Billy Cobham. We're talking about, you know, all
Virgil.
These... Virgil. We're talking about all these great drummers. You know, it is totally amazing that there's this connection in music, you know, and you hear people learning off everybody else, and it's just absolutely wonderful.
I've got to say as well with Billy Cobham, the one thing I really loved about him was his sense of humour and his smile. You know, when there's a moment, we get that. You know, every musician gets that, hopefully, on stage. When you get a spark between, you know, you'll play something, and he has this great grin. And when we had a photo taken, you were chatting to him, what I loved was that he was totally engaged with everyone. But obviously, I'm just grinning at you, grinning at him, and he's smiling back at you, and you're having this really lovely few minutes of chat and eye exchange, and then you get a photo taken, you know, and he starts to edge his beard just into shot for a joke. You know,
really,
I mean, such a, and I think that's what
we haven't got
have.
The photo back yet.
No, we haven't actually. Yeah. Well, it was the official photographer
that's
took
right.
it, so we'll ask Hugo. But I'm well done, Hugo. You know, because he really, and we met his promoter as well, the guy that actually sort of match made and sorted this out with Hugo. So, I can't remember his name now. But anyway, it's lovely. It's a big old family. And the thing is that people, what you find is that people are real people. And the really good ones are just loving.
Well, they are. And, yeah. You know, and he realised, and the thing, just to finish with the Billy Cobham story,
on,
when I was
on.
Talking to
Billy.
Him, I said, you know something, on this live show, you still have the drum sound that you had on the Spectrum album. And I know that it was recorded, engineered by Ken Scott, of course, who did the Beatles, he did David Bowie, did a lot of things, very, very famous engineer. And he said, yeah, he said, Ken, he's like my brother from another mother.
Jeff Beck. Because We've Ended as Lovers from the album Live at Ronnie Scott's, released on Eagle Records in 2008, featuring Vinnie Caluta on drums and one of my favourite bassists, Tal Wagenfeld, on bass.
Well, you know, the late great.
I can't believe he's gone.
No.
Well, he's still with us musically, but it's just like, Jeff, come on.
No, no, it's really, it really took us, you know, because we did an article on him when he passed away, and it's on.
It's a big loss, big loss.
Yeah, it's on a Substack.
That song was written by Stevie Wonder as well.
It was.
Yeah.
And I always remember when I watched it, I got the DVD and I watched it, and his eyes and his face when Tal had just done that solo. Yeah. It is great.
Yeah.
You know, and Vinnie Caluta, of course, drummer. He didn't play at the Poetry Drum Show last week, but I think he's one of our favourite drummers. His sensitivity, his sense of rhythm, his sense of timing. Because the whole of this album that Jeff Beck did, it's live, and it's just remarkable, and I love the tone of those Gretsch drums, you know. That's Hugo. Next time, Gretsch, please, that's what we're going to use. It's been I've really enjoyed this show, because it really has exercised my love of drums and guitar, you know, Tommy Verwin and Jeff Beck there.
Wow. I've learned a lot, actually, and I think that's the thing. It's just, you know, with this week's episode, it's actually just to give you a peek inside that kind of world. You don't have to go fully in, but just to be aware of it, you know, and to have a little taster of some of the obsessions that people can go to and the languages that people use, you know, because drummers are like multilingual, aren't they, really?
Mm.
And all about the rhythm. They were talking about, you know, where you play that. So if you have a count of 1, 2, 3, 4, do you play it just before the one, on the one, just after, you know? And I always call it like a two spliffs back kind of groove thing as well, when you're not totally like a metronome, but you're just sloppy, you're just relaxing. I mean, there's just loads of way. Well, it's how you feel.
Well, when Virgil was doing his masterclass, he actually counted 1, 2, 3, 4, and he was counting 1, 2, 3, 4 he was doing this drum thing, and it was nothing to do with 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know what he was doing within that.
He's got magic spells or something.
But, yeah, absolutely incredible. But anyway, that's it. That's the end of the show. And we're looking forward to the next one, which is going to be something completely different, because we're trying to do something really different on these shows, you know.
Yeah.
You can catch it at vibes.starlight-campbell.com, that's LITE.
And if you'd like to listen to our third studio album, Starlight One, it's available on 180 gram milky clear vinyl, CD and digital. You can either get that from our website, starlight-campbell.com, or go to Bandcamp. They look after us. We've not actually released it on any streaming platforms this time, but you can see the videos on our YouTube channel, and we've just released a brand new video for The Voting Machine, the second video from our new album. Okay, take care, and we'll see you next week.